Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. We dive into stories of true crime, from unsolved cold cases to historic kidnapping to gangsters and beyond. We are your source for true crime. We thank you for listening.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. This week, we dive into the horrific murder of Skylar Nice. Skylar disappeared from her home in Star City, West Virginia on July 6, 2012. There's a lot about social media people keep telling me about in this video, and we'll also take a look at her two best friends. It's definitely one of those, with friends like these, kind of situations. So let's get into what happened to Skylar Nice. Skylar Nice was born on February 10th, 1996, to parents Mary and Dave Nice. Often described as intelligent, compassionate, stubborn, and bubbly, Skylar was an only child. She grew up and went to elementary school in Cheat Lake, West Virginia. When Skylar was in the second grade, she met Sheila Addy. Sheila was only 5 months older and was also an only child. The two girls immediately became friends. They began high school together in 2010, where they met Rachel Schoaf, an aspiring actress and singer. Like Skylar and Sheila, Rachel was also an only child. The three stuck tightly together and began to get into just a little bit of trouble. Nothing major, you know, drinking alcohol, smoking weed, skipping school, breaking curfew, that kind of stuff. Pretty much your average high school troublemakers. Parents and friends of both Skylar and Rachel claim that Sheila was a bad influence in them. Some of Skylar's friends actually avoided hanging out with her when she was with Sheila, whom they described as mean and controlling. Rachel's friends said the same thing about Sheila, whom they blamed for changes in Rachel's personality and behavior. Regardless, Skylar had no intention of breaking up her relationship with Sheila, a friend she looked up to. Rachel's reasons for staying and hanging out with Sheila, however, were less obvious. She came from a relatively affluent family and was more popular than Sheila. She didn't really need Sheila to be cool. This is just straight out of high school drama. It's ridiculous. I think Rachel just liked the fact that with Sheila, she was able to do things she couldn't do with friends who shared her similar religious background. With Sheila, she was able to break the rules. Despite Sheila constantly being described as the bad one, the one who was evil and controlling, it was actually Rachel who changed things up when she entered the picture. For a while, everything seemed to be going fine until her sophomore year. Skylar was then put in an uncomfortable position when, during a sleepover in late summer 2011, she watched Sheila and Rachel have drunken sex. The sleepover ended with Skylar and Sheila arguing, and a rift began to form between Skylar and Sheila. Meanwhile, Sheila and Rachel were becoming closer, and Skylar started to become excluded. Skylar told her mom about the incident when she rear-ended a car one time. Often, Sheila and Rachel would dress alike, leaving Skylar as the odd girl out. Both Sheila and Rachel were sexually active and had boyfriends, while they viewed Skylar as an immature tag-along. Yet, Skylar knew a lot of things about Sheila and Rachel that no one else knew, secrets that would become problematic. Skylar hinted at this several times on Twitter. At one point, she tweeted, "I tell the whole school all the shit I have on everyone, which is a lot. Hashtag, if I could get away with it." As I said, Twitter comes up a lot in this story. Arguments often played out on Twitter between Skylar and Sheila, and they continued to worsen. A tipping point came in early June 2012 when Skylar and Sheila spent an entire one-week trip to Myrtle Beach fighting. When they got home, Sheila told Rachel, Skylar has to die. Sheila's call for a murder didn't come out of nowhere. Fellow students and even a teacher had overheard the girls talking about the best ways to dispose of a body as early as October 2011. Just weeks before they were overheard, a body had been discovered not far from where they lived, so at the time it wasn't considered particularly strange. However, according to one girl who overheard them, they were specifically talking about Skylar. When this girl told Skylar, "Hey, I just overheard your two best friends talking about how to dump your body so no one would find it," Skylar shrugged it off, thinking they were just joking. She even confronted Sheila and Rachel about it, but they assured her it was nothing. "Would you guys rather suffocate or get shot?" "Get shot." "Shot, as it would be quicker." "Depends on where." "Would you rather in the head?" "Yes, there would be no suffering." "Be eaten by ants or suffocated?" "Suffocated." "Drowning or suffocated?" "Suffocating." It's almost the same thing. I know, but it's not. All things that Sheila and Rachel asked. That wasn't the only warning sign. In spring 2012, worried that Skylar might blackmail them, Rachel allegedly told another student. Wouldn't mind if she died. She also half-jokingly blurted out, "We should kill her," during a science class, with Sheila nodding in agreement. Still, the group continued to hang out together, and while Skylar was aware of the state of her friendship with Sheila, still her best friend, she had no idea what was coming. On Thursday, July 5th, 2012, Skylar got home from her shift at Wendy's around 10 p.m. She kissed her parents goodnight and went up to her room. Around midnight, Sheila and Rachel either called or texted her, asking if she wanted to go for a ride. Sheila parked her car next to the niece's apartment, and as she usually did, Skylar snuck out of her room, placing a small bench beneath her window, and got into the car with the other two girls. Unbeknownst to Skylar, the trunk of Sheila's car contained a shovel, fresh clothes, towels, and bleach. Three girls drove to Moore's Run Road, a one-lane back road. Sheila parked the car about a mile in, and they got out. They chatted for a while, and when Skylar turned to grab a lighter from the car, the girls counted to three, and on this prearranged signal, started stabbing Skylar with knives they had hidden under their hoodies. Skylar tried to run, but was tackled by Rachel. Skylar managed to grab Rachel's knife and fight back, inflicting a cut above Rachel's ankle, but she was quickly overpowered and stabbed repeatedly. The girls then stood over Skylar, watching her die. In her final moments, Skylar could only say why. Sheila and Rachel had planned to bury Skylar, but the ground was too rocky for their shovels. Instead, they moved the body next to a big tree and covered her with rocks and branches. After washing themselves in a creek, they disposed of their bloody clothes and knives, but left Skylar's turned-off cell phone next to her body. All of this took a few hours, and the girls were back home by dawn. The next day, Skylar's parents left for work early, assuming she was still asleep in her bed. Her father, Dave, came home around midday so Skylar could borrow his car for a shift at Wendy's. However, no one was home. The door to Skylar's room was locked from the inside. Dave noticed a small bench outside and an open window. Realizing that Skylar had snuck out during the night, he immediately called Sheila to see if she had been in contact with Skylar. Sheila admitted she had talked to Skylar around midnight but claimed she hadn't seen her. Soon after, Mary, Skylar's mother, came home and a manager at Wendy's called, asking about Skylar. With the situation becoming more worrying, the nieces called the police. Sheila arrived at their home shortly after and changed her story, admitting that she and Skylar had gone joyriding the previous night. She claimed they picked Skylar up around 11 p.m. and dropped her off less than an hour later at the end of the street. Skylar's mother, Mary, knew something was seriously wrong and took to Facebook. Sheila and her mother, Tara, soon arrived at the niece's home, wanting to help with the search. They knocked on nearby doors, asking, "Have you seen her? Is she here? Did you see anything?" But they found nothing. They asked their landlord to check surveillance footage, which showed Skylar getting into a car. No one realized at the time that the car Skylar got into was Sheila's. The footage was erroneously described as showing an SUV, even though Sheila's car wasn't an SUV. The police officer who viewed the footage told the nieces, "She probably just ran away with some guy and will be back in a few days." It was perhaps the worst advice to give. After Skylar went missing, Sheila played the victim, trying to gain sympathy. The local police detective assigned to Skylar's disappearance was joined by an FBI agent due to another person having gone missing in the area weeks earlier. They interviewed Sheila on July 9th, just 3 days after the murder. Sheila repeated her story about picking Skylar up at 11 p.m. and dropping her off less than an hour later. She seemed more curious about the investigation than worried about her friend. The detective noticed Sheila's silver car matched the one seen in the surveillance footage. The next day, the detective called Rachel, who claimed to know nothing about Skylar's disappearance. She had been at church camp on July 7th, but had spent the morning of July 6th boating with her mother and her mother's friend. Both adults noticed a cut on Rachel's ankle. Rachel agreed to a face-to-face interview after camp, but failed to show up. When interviewed, Rachel gave the same rehearsed-sounding story as Sheila. There was still nothing to go on. Since Skylar was last seen getting into a car voluntarily, an Amber Alert couldn't be issued. Her family and friends found it bizarre, knowing she wasn't the type to leave without telling anyone. She left behind her contact lenses and phone charger, and the bench was still under her window, as if she intended to return. The school year started about...
"Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy."
"Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?"
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
A month later, and there were still no leads. Mary Niece, understandably frustrated, contacted state police, who took over the case. Warrants were issued to seize electronic devices from Sheila and Rachel. The state police reviewed the surveillance footage multiple times before realizing that Sheila had never picked up Skylar at 11 p.m. Dave Niece, Skylar's father, was interviewed by the media as the search continued. He recounted what Skylar did the night she disappeared, saying, quote, "She came home from work that evening and she got home and walked in the door. She went over to her mother, hugged and kissed her, then came over to me, kissed me, and went to her bedroom. That's the last we saw of her." From the beginning, Sheila tried to insert herself into the investigation. She continually tried to get on the niece's good side, crying and appearing upset, pretending to be distraught over Skylar's disappearance. Sheila distributed missing posters and tried to appear as the biggest advocate for finding Skylar, positioning herself as a grieving best friend. However, she was also curious about the investigation, asking the nieces questions about it. When the police told the nieces not to share any details of the investigation with Sheila, suspecting she knew more than she was letting on, Sheila started asking other people for updates instead. It was clear she wanted to stay one step ahead at all times. Back at school, rumors about Sheila and Rachel began to swirl. Some speculated that Skylar might have overdosed and that Sheila and Rachel had left her to die. Despite this, Sheila continued referring to the FBI and state police as her best buds, acting as if she was working with them to find Skylar. Rachel, on the other hand, started to crack under pressure, distance herself from everything related to the investigation, and even avoided visiting Skylar's parents. Rachel seemed to be shutting down, closing her ears and mind to it all. The authorities noticed Rachel's deteriorating state and used it to their advantage. They pressed her by pointing out that the surveillance footage did not match Sheila's story and that they had cell phone records that tracked her movement. This pressure pushed Rachel into changing her story. She said that the three of them had gone for a ride, but Skylar had run off into the woods and Sheila and Rachel couldn't find her. Sheila then changed her story to match Rachel's after learning Rachel had already altered her version of events. On December 16th, with no resolution in sight, Mary Niece posted a long message on Facebook detailing the various steps law enforcement and the community had taken to find Skylar. She also called out Sheila and Rachel for lying and even mentioned the possibility that Skylar had been murdered. This drew more attention to the two girls. Meanwhile, Skylar's disappearance had gained significant attention. Online sleuths and community members alike suspected Sheila and Rachel. Their tweets from that period only fueled speculation. Rachel's emotional state worsened. She had a heated argument with her parents, locked herself in her room, and attempted to take her own life. She was hospitalized and placed in a psychiatric unit. On January 3rd, Rachel was interviewed again by the police. This time, after only a few questions, she confessed, saying, quote, "We stabbed her." Rachel recounted what had happened. They had picked Skylar up after midnight, driven to a remote back road, stabbed her to death before covering her body with branches and rocks. When the police asked why they did it, Rachel's only answer was, "We just didn't like her anymore." Rachel agreed to lead the police to Skylar's body. The investigators, Rachel and her attorney, arrived at the location, but it was so snowy that Rachel couldn't pinpoint the exact point. They would have to wait for the snow to melt before they could find the body. Now aware of what had happened, the investigators still needed evidence beyond Rachel's confession. They put Rachel under electronic surveillance and had her arrange a meeting with Sheila in hopes of obtaining an incriminating statement. Unfortunately, Rachel couldn't extract anything from Sheila during their meeting. On January 16th, 2 weeks later, investigators returned to the spot, this time with a canine unit. The snow had mostly melted. One of the dog handlers, while picking up a GPS tracker that had fallen off, noticed skeletal remains under a pile of branches. 6 months after Skylar had disappeared, she was finally found. Over the following months, Rachel remained free while investigators gathered evidence against Sheila, who they believed would never admit to the crime on her own. Sheila, meanwhile, knew she was under scrutiny. A search warrant was issued for her home, and every knife in her house was seized along with her car. By this time, Sheila was aware that Skylar's body had been found. On March 13th, the body was officially identified as Skylar Niece, and this information was made public. The postmortem revealed Skylar had been stabbed 50 times, but few other details were disclosed. On that day, Sheila tweeted, "Rest easy, Skylar. You'll always be my best friend," feigning grief and innocence. A month later, Sheila posted another cryptic tweet, but the noose was tightening. On May 1st, Rachel surrendered herself to authorities and had her first court appearance, where she pled guilty to second-degree murder. In exchange for her testimony against Sheila, the prosecution recommended a 20-year sentence. Sheila was then arrested while dining with her mother at a Cracker Barrel. On September 4th, Sheila pled not guilty to charges of murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy. At Sheila's pretrial hearing on January 24th, 2014, she broke down in tears before the trial began, clinging to her attorney for support. However, she changed her plea and pled guilty to first-degree murder. In exchange for her plea, the prosecution agreed to a sentence of 15 years to life with the possibility of parole after 15 years. Skylar's father, Dave Neese, spoke at the sentencing, saying, quote, "I'm here today with my wife, Mary. The person sitting before you, this so-called friend, took her away from us without any remorse or feeling. You can look in." Skylar's father, Dave Neese, spoke at the sentencing, saying, quote, "I'm here today with my wife, Mary. The person sitting before you, this so-called friend, took her away from us without any remorse or feeling. You can look into the eyes of those who were responsible, but you could never hear what they heard as they were taking her life. You see the faces of the killers, but you can never see Skylar's face again. You can never understand what she felt in her final moments." Sheila Addy, for your conviction in the offense of murder in the first degree, upon your plea of guilty, it is the sentence of the court that you imprisoned in the West Virginia State Penitentiary for the rest of your natural life. Consistent with the requirements of the Constitution of the United States, that sentence is with mercy, which makes you eligible for parole after you've served 15 years. And that is a sentence that Sheila Addy received. After the trial, Dave Neese vowed to attend every parole hearing to ensure Sheila would never be released. In an interview, he was asked if the sentencing brought any closure. Saying, quote, "Like I said before, there is no closure. My little girl is gone. If there's any closure, it will only come if they both stay in prison. One is already sentenced, and we're waiting for the next. Then we can start thinking about closure. But right now, it doesn't feel like it will ever come." Rachel's sentencing hearing began on February 2nd. She was sentenced to 30 years for second-degree murder with the possibility of parole after 10. To this day, the exact motive remains unknown. Why did they kill Skylar? That question still haunts everyone involved. What could have been so serious that they felt the need to end her life? Mary Neese spoke about the betrayal, saying, quote, "You didn't think about what you were doing to Skylar when you killed her. Why should we care how you feel now? You comforted us, you stood by us, pretended to care while the police closed in. You put us, your family, and everyone else through unimaginable pain. Skylar missed out on everything, a life she deserved. No prom, no graduation, no future." Both Sheila and Rachel are currently serving their sentences at the Lakin Correctional Center. In 2014, Skylar's parents sued the girl's parents for damages, arguing that by neglecting to supervise their daughters, they were partially responsible for what happened to Skylar. While it's true the parents had no control over their daughter's actions, the nieces pursued this case to bring attention to the consequences of such neglect. The lawsuit was settled for $5 million, but it's unlikely the nieces will ever see that money. One of the most disturbing aspects of this case, lack of a clear motive. "We just didn't like her anymore. That's all they said. Terrifying and incomprehensible. This was an extremely sad and tragic case of teenage jealousy, resentment, or whatever it was. No one may ever fully understand. It reads like a storyline from a high school drama, and in fact, similar stories have inspired movies and TV shows." Let me know your thoughts on this case in the comment section below. Give us a thumbs up if you like your video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And as always, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. Your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring in new hosts, be able to pay them, and one day take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook at True Crime Never Sleeps podcast and on Twitter at True Crime NS. And follow us on Instagram at True Crime Never Sleeps. Thanks for watching. If you want to support the show, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or become a patron at patreon.com/truecrimeneversleeps.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant, Sweet Tango Apples, guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.